Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson.
It is my great privilege to welcome back to Talk Nation Radio, and this is the first time I've said that, to welcome back Brian Terrell, who is co-coordinator for Voices for Creative Nonviolence and event coordinator for the Nevada Desert Experience, and he is speaking to us from Nevada. He lives on a Catholic worker farm in Molloy, Iowa, from which Brian travels, speaks, and acts with various communities working for peace. 2 years ago, he was serving a six-month prison sentence for protesting drone killing from Whiteman Air Force Base in Missouri, and this past month he returned from a visit to Kabul, Afghanistan. But we are speaking with him because he has also been a big part of an anti-drone action at Creech Air Force Base called Shutdown Creech in Nevada, and because we need an update after these past couple of years of advancing in the anti-drone activism movement. Brian Terrell, welcome back to Talk Nation Radio.
Oh, thank you, David. Good to talk with you again.
Great to have you back on. Remind us just briefly how you got in, because you were one of the first who got into this movement of activism at drone bases.
Yes, I was a part, one of the Creech 14, the first nonviolent direct action, really one of the first protests at any drone base in the United States here, and that was at Creech Air Force Base, which is some 40 miles outside of Las Vegas. And at the time, it was the one of the only places where they were flying, from where they were flying drones. The first Predator flight took place there in 1996, and 10 years later, they were flying drones, we find now, secretly for the CIA, beginning back then. It's where drone warfare started, and it's so we're gathered there. Our friend Father Louis Vitale with Nevada Desert Experience, who is a Air Force veteran, had flown fighter planes, was probably one of the first people in the peace movement in the United States to recognize just what these drones were and what they mean. And it was at a demonstration focused on the nuclear test site that Louis first noticed these things flying around and asked people what they were. And that's how drone resistance started here. And then as the drones have been spreading all over the country, the drone bases, so have the protests.
And what year was that you first got started?
This was in the spring of 2009.
So the early days of President Obama.
Yeah, the drones had been around for a while. The first armed drone attack was in, I believe, in October or November of 2001. But the Bush administration used the drones very sparingly, and it was just about the time that shortly after President Obama's inauguration that the drones came to be one of the number one weapons in the so-called war on terror, and that's about the time our protest started as well.
Is it safe to assume that Barack Obama, among others in Washington, saw drones as a cheap and easy and quiet way to pursue wars without as many U.S. bodies coming home in boxes?
Yes, that's safe. And I think he's said just about as much. But with that apparent ease is, we are engaged in combat in many other different places. It's and the opinion of this administration is that they don't need the congressional approval that they would seek for using other weapon systems because there are not any either boots on the ground, or our pilots are not going into foreign airspace physically, So it's you know, we our drones are flying in, you know, certainly more places than we know about, and in places that have not been in any kind of, you know, conflict zone for the United States. I even hate to say use the word war, because we're kind of gone beyond war into something even more frightening.
Although we should note that the president maintains he can fight any type of war anywhere forever and ever without congressional authorization. He just doesn't mind it if they should see fit to offer it in certain cases. So,
right.
So the habit of thinking around the drones may be being applied to the other types of warfare now. But there's been a great deal of protest at bases around the United States and at companies that manufacture drones, and there's been a great deal of news and attention brought by protesters like yourself. What was done at Creech Air Force Base just recently? This was a major effort.
Yes, we had a gathering called Shutdown Creech. And we don't know the exact numbers, but there were, you know, maybe 150 participating in different kinds of ways, which is pretty good to get that many people out to the desert. Code Pink and Veterans for Peace and Nevada Desert Experience, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, and Voices for Grave Nonviolence were some of the organizers of this. And we camped several days in the desert on Bureau of Land Management land right across from the base, and had a few days of seminars and planning. And then on the 6th, we had in the morning we had blockades of the two gates into the base, and various die-ins and other dramatic performances, stopping the drone operators from coming onto the base. And I think we were pretty effective at sometimes. This was a very flexible and mobile action, and some 34 people were finally arrested. We had traffic backed up quite a ways. And, I was trying to speak to the, I think we were able to speak to the drone operators who we know are very much questioning what they're doing and questioning whether this is actually so easy as they've been told that it is.
We've talked about this before outside of this program, but the police gave a very unusual warning when they came to arrest you at this base. What was it that they approached you with?
Yes, well, when you have some kind of demonstration that the government decides is illegal, there's often kind of a public statement on a bullhorn, and they're usually kind of boilerplate, saying you're ordered to disperse, and if you don't, you could be arrested. And this time, one of the curious things is that officer of the Las Vegas Metro Police opened this up, saying, not as you would expect, I'm, as you know, a member of the Las Vegas Metro Police. He said, in the name of the people of the United States, and then told us to disperse, and if we did not, we would be subject to police action, which could include arrest and could also include other police actions that could result in significant physical pain or serious injury.
Sounds like police on the streets in so many incidents that now make the news. Is this a first in your experience that they don't just threaten arrest of non-violent opponents of violence who are there to risk arrest and are planning to docilely submit, but threaten severe violence and injury? Is this a first?
I'd never heard that before. And I think something to kind of add to the strangeness of it is originally we were arrested for, some of us for trespassing and others for obstructing, pedestrians obstructing traffic, very minor charges. But now they, as we're watching the website for the Clark County Justice Court to see as the charges are being filed, and nine of us, the charges have been changed. We're seeing, waiting to see if it's going to happen with all of us, to pedestrian soliciting a ride or business. In other words, we're being accused of jaywalking, or not of jaywalking, we're being accused of hitchhiking. And they were threatening severe pain or serious injury for people who, their estimation, we were hitchhiking. It seems very, very disapproachable. You know, it's not...
You can get killed for jaywalking in Ferguson, Missouri. So
the, yes, yes.
You know, the penalty doesn't always fit the crime. There was, you mentioned though that you were able to make yourselves heard by the pilots, and I saw also a video of a television ad. I think it was Nick Mottern's group. I think it's No Drones, KNOW Drones, paid for on television in Las Vegas, and they were planning to run it in other cities, asking drone pilots not to fly the drones. What do you know about who's hearing this message from all of these protests and how they're responding to it?
Well, there have been a number of drone operators, pilots, and sensors, and other people involved in the process who have left and have been very, very vocal. There's a much larger group of people who are quietly not content, and people who are the Air Force we're now finding is having a very difficult time keeping people in these jobs. And we're discovering something about the nature of violence and war and of post-traumatic stress, because these soldiers who never leave the United States, in my home state in Iowa and in New York and Ohio and several other places now, it's even National Guard weekend warriors are flying drones. And they are in air-conditioned comfort, and they're able to get bathroom breaks, and they're able to go home to their families at night, and they're still suffering from tremendous stress and moral injury, and it doesn't come from the fact that they're been subjected to loud noises or to physical cruelty or to physical pain, but of what they're seeing and what they're witnessing and what they know that they're a part of. The the drone operators are reporting that they are more intimate with their victims than probably any soldier in modern warfare, and that at sometimes they will even follow people for days or weeks, watching with the video feed of the drone, and other people are watching the same video feed and making determinations and giving the orders, and the order comes to shoot and kill, and you've killed somebody that you've watched go about their business. One drone operator said about somebody that he'd killed after a time like this, and somebody somewhere watching the video saw that something to make him think that this person was an imminent threat to the United States, but the drone operator didn't see it. But he did say that he had seen enough to know that this man was a good dad.
Yeah.
And, you know, he has to live with that, you know, with that murder on his conscience. It's a tremendous violence to our young people who are being made to do this, and it doesn't make it safer for us in the United States. It doesn't make things safer for our soldiers. I was just in Afghanistan a few weeks ago, and the day before I left at the airport in Kabul that I was getting ready to leave from, an Afghan police officer shot and killed two military contractors, American contractors. And I've not heard about this particular case, but there have been many cases of the so-called blue on green killing in Afghanistan. And in many of them, what we find out is that these killings are in revenge, you know, by Afghans who've seen their members of their families, have seen their villages, you know, destroyed by these drone attacks, and are seeking vengeance. So it just doesn't work to keep the war far away. It doesn't happen.
Now, I know how you and I and many other people would react if we watched families on video for days and weeks before being asked to murder someone. And we know how certain drone pilots have reacted because they've spoken out against what they were a part of. But I'm not clear, you know, whether PTSD is really higher for drone pilots. There are those arguing that, you know, really they're having a hard time keeping drone pilots in their jobs because they're made fun of and put down by the other pilots and the other members of the Air Force, and they're looked down on as lesser members of the military. Do we really know to what extent it's moral injury, and to what extent it's something else that's making it hard for them to keep drone pilots at work?
Well, post-traumatic stress and moral injury are things that the Pentagon is always very reluctant to admit exist at all. You know, so the studies aren't being made. I know, though, in as early as 2009, when we were beginning here at Creech Air Force Base, the commander at Creech was quoted in a local newspaper saying that they were surprised for the need that they had to bring in more counselors and chaplains. He said they could not find enough to meet the demand of the drone operators who were asking for this kind of help. But I think the other issues about it are all fit in. The whole very bizarre things like the drone pilots wearing flight suits when they're going to work, and they're just sitting at a computer like everybody else. The very strange kind of warfare, and I think part of the reason that people don't want to do it too is you're hearing some of these other reports, is there's kind of a shame in it, that it's I'm a pacifist and believe it's wrong to kill anybody for any reason, but I do understand there's a huge difference between killing somebody who might possibly hurt you, or might possibly kill you or your friends, or might possibly be a threat to your family, and another thing to kill somebody who's thousands of miles away, who can't possibly retaliate, who's not any kind of threat to you. So it's even though those people are saying there's other reasons why there's discontent, I think the discontent still comes from the very real disconnects and problems that just come from this idea of killing by remote control.
We're speaking with Brian Terrell, who is co-coordinator for Voices for Creative Nonviolence, among other positions. Brian, how has public opinion moved over the past 5 or 6 years? In my understanding, it still has a long way to go, but is much less supportive of murdering random people with drone strikes than it was when this began.
Oh, definitely. I think we still have a long way to go, and people are dying. You know, we can't lose sight of that, but we've made tremendous strides. I remember when we started in this, even our friends in the peace movement, many of them couldn't understand why we were choosing this one piece of technology. Of course, this was before it was you know, the one of the number one parts of a foreign policy, but still, yeah, we even had friends saying, you know, can't you accept that technology can maybe make some improvements, that this is something more precise and something more limited than saturation bombing or invasions. And in the general public, the feeling seemed to be that well, what's the problem? Where is the downside? We can have a war and not get hurt. But I think those have kind of fallen apart. And the fact that the president has had to go on the defensive and explain what his view of what's going on with these is very telling as well. I think the drone today is something that I think the general public sees as something kind of disreputable and kind of ugly and icky, and it's not celebrated as it once was. One thing we found with our resisting and protesting drones, when all this was starting back in 2009 and 10 and 11, when the drones were more and more military units around the country were shifting from conventional warfare to drones, it always happened with a lot of fanfare and open houses and interviews and bragging about this new technology coming into the area. And the last few years, as drone warfare is proliferating, it's very, very difficult for us to find out what's going on at any particular base. Whether they're actually flying drones at a particular place or not. Our own National Guard base in Iowa had announced 3 years ago that they were going to be flying drones, and they still won't say whether the conversion is complete and whether drones are actually being flown from that base. You can't find that information, whether this is something that's going to happen in the future or it's happening now. And a few years ago they would have been bragging. So they're keeping the government is recognizing that the tide is changing.
Yeah, it seems like 5 or 6 years ago people would tell you, isn't a drone war better than another kind of war? And you would say, but there wasn't any war in Yemen, there wasn't any war in Somalia, and you have a drone war instead of no war. Whereas now you can say, not only wasn't there any kind of war in Yemen, but the drone war in Yemen has completely destabilized Yemen and resulted in massive violence of all sorts, to the point where there may very well be every kind of war in Yemen. I mean, is there a growing understanding, not just among those who are paying attention, but among the general public, that the drones might be counterproductive, that they have replaced the torture photographs as the number one recruiting tool, that they are traumatizing huge numbers of children and adults, not just murdering selective people? Is that awareness that it's counterproductive on its own terms making its way into the public?
I think it is. Slowly, and it's very difficult to awaken the American people to just about anything of any importance. I think too, in government and in the military, even Stanley McChrystal, who was the U.S. general, who was the head of NATO forces in Afghanistan, when he left that position, he said that he was horrified that Americans didn't realize the danger of drone warfare and how much hatred this is engendering around the world for us. There are many former U.S. diplomats and military people. The refrain, "We're making enemies faster than we can kill them," is something you can do a Google search of those words, and there are lots of former military and diplomatic people who are claiming those words for their own. Very, very dangerous for us, and it's making us more and more hated around the world. We're actually, I think, in less safer in our homes because of these drone warfares.
We just got a couple minutes left, Brian. The conversation is also beginning to include the idea that because of drones, war is the norm now, and you have the United Nations putting out reports describing an institution created to get rid of war, describing war as becoming the norm. You have this liberal professor at Georgetown, Rosa Brooks, who's just written that we should abolish the distinction between wartime laws and peacetime laws, which, I completely agree with. Get rid of the wartime waivers. Yep. of rights and regulations. But she says, in order to accept that war is just going to be with us every moment from here on out, it's permanent, and we must have some of these things, like murdering people, be legal all the time without worrying about this distinction of wartime and peacetime and war zones and peace zones. It seems to me like giving up on civilization.
Well, yeah, the distinctions are disappearing, and that's one of the things that the drone is doing. And we recognize that the drone is not as the Hellfire missiles fired by drones are not as dangerous as in themselves as the nuclear missiles on a Trident submarine or so many other B-2 bomber or these other systems, but nothing like the drone has done. Nothing but the drone has done so much to destroy those distinctions between war and peace. We are. Dick Cheney said back in 2001 that this war against terror may never stop. It may become normal. Pope Francis has said that we are now in World War III. It's only happening in isolated pockets around the world, but it is a world war, and this is the kind of war that's going on now, which is more of a crime than anything that we traditionally recognize as war. But it's only possible with the kind of technology that the drone brings to the world.
And that technology is going to get worse, and people like Brian Terrell and groups like Voices for Creative Nonviolence and Nevada Desert Experience are going to keep waking us up to it until we put a stop to it. Brian, thank you very much for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you so much.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.